This holiday, BMW has reunited three members of the family at the BMW Road Home Sales Event. The Agile X3, engineered for any adventure. The plug-in hybrid X5, commanding the streets with unmatched presence. And the all-electric i4, charging into the future with impeccable performance. Hurry in to find what powers your journey at the BMW Road Home Sales Event. BMW, the ultimate driving machine. Hurry in for exceptional offers through January 2nd. Visit BMWUSA.com for details.
When it comes to hiring, don't search for a great talent, match with them. Thanks to Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find qualified candidates fast. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. Just go to Indeed.com/listen right now. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility. Go to Indeed.com/listen and tell them you heard about them from this podcast. Terms and conditions apply.
Is it just me, or has TV gotten really complicated? I'm either endlessly searching for my favorite shows or subscribing to a dozen different streaming services to make sure I can watch everything I love. And I'm not even saving that much money compared to my old cable bill. Thankfully, Philo has changed all that for me. One service, all the stuff I need. Philo's got current seasons of the shows I can't miss live on networks like Paramount, A&E, MTV, Discovery, and TLC. Classics like The Office, Martin, and Friends that I never get sick of, and all of the incredible originals on AMC Plus, from Mad Men to Orphan Black. Don't forget their library of more than 75,000 movies and shows, all of which I can save and re-watch anytime for a whole year. Never miss a minute of shows like Gypsy Rose, Life After Lockup on Lifetime, Yellowstone, or Fatal Attraction. Best of all, with Philo, you get all this for just $28 a month. No contracts, no hassles. Just one subscription and a world of entertainment. So go to philo.tv and check it out for a free 7-day trial. That's philo.tv to start watching.
It's better over here.
Now at T-Mobile, get four 5G phones on us and four lines for $25 a line per month when you switch with eligible trade-ins. All on America's largest 5G network.
Minimum of four lines for $25 per line per month with auto-pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto-pay, plus taxes and fees and $10 device connection charge. Phones via 24 monthly bill credits for well-qualified customers. Contact us before canceling entire account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. Bill credits end if you pay off devices early. See T-Mobile.com.
From KMOX Sports.
Okay, boys, here we go.
Welcome to the Graybar Sports Open Line.
Those bit swings, and he hits a drive. He hits a slammer.
Graybar, your distributor for electrical and datacom needs.
Here we go.
Now, Matt Pauly on America's Sports Voice, KMOX.
All right, man, let's get going here.
Here we go, here we go, here we go. Let's go.
We have arrived to the end of the week. It is Friday. It is time for a Graybar Sports Open Line right here on KMOX. My name is Matt Pauly. Great to have you with us. Taking you till 8 o'clock this evening. Jam-packed program in about 10 minutes. Lynn Worthy from the Post-Dispatch and STL Today will join us. Next hour, we are going to talk with Ben Arnett. We'll preview Mizzou and Kansas. Huge basketball game coming up on Sunday. Our weekly Friday conversation with Kevin Wheeler will be coming up in the 7 o'clock hour as well. This is our final show before we head to Dallas for baseball's winter meetings. We'll be broadcasting live from the Hilton down in Dallas starting on Monday as we tell you what's going on. And we don't know exactly what's going to happen. All we know is that everybody in baseball will be together and will be ripe for moves to be made, whether they're actually made or not. Who knows? I want to start with this, and this is kind of the big conversation of the day. Spoke about this on the Gas House Gang with Bernie Miklas earlier today. We'll replay that tonight at 8 o'clock once we get done. I'll talk a little bit about it with Lynn Worthy in a bit and with Kevin Wheeler next hour. The comments that were made by Cardinals President of Baseball Operations, John Mozeliak. And I'd remind you that Mo will have his weekly Sunday morning appearance with Tom Ackerman coming up during sports on a Sunday morning. And I'm sure Tom will ask him some follow-ups on based off the reporting that we got from Katie Wu. What I'm trying to figure out right now is like what exactly the message is from the Cardinals. What are the expectations for this upcoming season? Because I don't know if it's mixed messaging going on. I don't know if it's a changing message. And it's fine if it's a changing message. Things change. Things happen. Sonny Gray says, I want to be a Cardinal. Wilson Contreras says, I want to be a Cardinal. You get your TV deal done with FanDuel Sports Network. You get sports gambling legalized in the state of Missouri. Like, there's nothing wrong with messaging changing based off circumstances changing. So I'm not being critical of the message changing, but I think the message has changed a little bit. And how much does it matter, I guess, is the question. So the message that I feel like has changed, when we showed up for the press conference near the end of the baseball season, right afterwards, where Chaim Bloom was announced as the next president of baseball operations, the main focus of that press conference, other than the actual like moves that are being made, what Chaim's going to be doing this year and what he's going to be doing next year and beyond with the organization. Part of the focus of that press conference was the fact that the Cardinals are cutting payroll and giving an opportunity to go with more younger players, and that there was a possibility that the team could take a step back this upcoming season. So we've kind of been running with that. That's what we've been talking about ever since. Now, there was another Zoom conference that we had, I don't know, a month and a half later. And I felt like the messaging had started to change a little bit, but still we're hearing some of the same things. And now it feels like, yes, they're saying that it is about playing the kids and about giving certain young players opportunities, and not just opportunities, but giving them runway to be able to fail. So if a Jordan Walker just really struggles out of the gate, guess what? He's going to be running in and starting in right field every night. Nolan Gorman's really struggling. Guess what? He's going to be in the lineup every day. That they want to get those guys 600 at bats, things like that. No matter the production. So that hasn't changed. But we did not hear much about how much the team would compete this upcoming season, how much they would contend. That wasn't, and maybe that was a bad job by us in the media on not like asking that very direct question. Hey, do you expect to have a team that can contend for a division title? Do you expect to have a team that can do something like do you contend for a playoff spot? Whatever. I don't really remember if that exact question was asked or not. Maybe it was, and it wasn't really answered. I don't know. But that hasn't been part of the messaging up until here recently. And if you would have read, and I hope you do read, and I hope you have a subscription to The Athletic, because Katie Wu does a fantastic job covering the Cardinals. She spoke with John Mozeliak, and it was under the thought process of, okay, is this team going to trade Ryan Helsley? Is this team going to trade Eric Fetty? The two guys that probably can bring you the most back if you move on from them. And right now, the indication is that that's not going to happen. Now, is that posturing? It might be. Is it that the market right now isn't ripe for those kind of moves to be made? You know, especially when it comes to Helsley, there are a lot of closers out there. A ton of closers out there that are going to be available. And some high-end closers as well. Devin Williams is likely going to be traded by the Brewers. Pete Fairbanks, the St. Louis guy, could easily be traded by the Rays. And then there's a bunch of other guys out there that are pretty darn good that may end up getting moved as well. You're not selling low on Ryan Helsley. You're either selling high or you're not selling at all. That's pretty simple. So maybe when they talk about they're not going to trade Helsley, it's because right now the market isn't really in a place where a team's going to give that much for him, because they feel like if they can't get at least what you're getting out of Helsley, they can get close for a lesser cost. Maybe that's what's going on, but it seems like the messaging has changed a little bit from us not really talking about the Cardinals being a competitive team this year that can contend for a playoff spot, to now that being the messaging and the idea that Ryan Helsley might not get traded. Eric Fetty might not get traded. Not even might not get traded, that they're not really shopping those guys right now. It hasn't been, those terms have not been put on Nolan Arenado. Nobody has denied the fact that the Cardinals are shopping Arenado, but read Katie's story today. There's no guarantee, that a Nolan Arenado deal ends up getting done either. And we'll talk about this a lot more later on in the show. You don't trade Arenado. All of a sudden, you look at the roster makeup and the ability to get certain young guys, you know, playing time and that runway and potentially 600 at bats. Like, just where do they get it from? The numbers are the numbers, and it becomes very, very challenging to do some of the things that the Cardinals have indicated that they'd like to do this year if an Arenado is still around. But maybe he will be, and they'll figure it all out. So that's a narrative. That's a storyline that certainly is going to continue into next week. We'll talk a little bit about that with Lynn Worthy. He joins us in just a moment or so. This is the Graybar Sports Open Line on KMOX. It's Graybar Sports Open Line here on KMOX. My name's Matt Pauly. I'll tell you what, Cardinals beat writers for the Post-Dispatch and STL today working overtime. I'm looking up at our MLB Network screen in our studios, and I see the face of Derek Gould. And as Derek's talking on TV, we're going to bring on via the radio Lynn Worthy, who does cover the Cardinals again for the Post-Dispatch and STL today. Lynn, appreciate you taking some time with us in front of the baseball winter meetings. How are you?
I'm doing good. I hope you had a good Thanksgiving. It's been a while since we chatted, so thanks for having me.
Yeah, absolutely. Same to you as well. Let's just start with this, because there's been some reporting here recently, and there were some things said in the Post-Dispatch previously, and then it was kind of confirmed by The Athletic today. Sounds like the Cardinals are almost changing the messaging a little bit for this upcoming season, where there's a lot more talk about being competitive and things like that. Do you agree? Like, do you feel like the messaging is changing a little bit right now?
I don't know if it's changing. I think the idea of, you know, reset versus rebuild is part of it. And I think that that's part of the reason that they kept hitting reset. Because I think if when you hear rebuild, it's you're going to take a couple steps backwards. Like, you're going to have, you know, you're expecting losing record. You're expecting, you know, a couple of down years. And I think that's why they tried to stay away from that. At the same time, I think the level of success they reach is probably going to be almost entirely is probably a little bit of a stretch, but it's going to be based on the improvements of some of the young guys. So however much improvement you see from some of the guys who have sort of, you know, been up and down or been inconsistent, I think that's going to ultimately decide how much progress they actually make as a team, or how much success they have as a team. But I think that's where there's a little bit, you know, you hear John Mozeliak with a little bit of optimism about, oh, we're going to be a little bit better than people think. I think that's based on, well, if these guys play to what they think that they're capable of, then that's where that maybe happens. Of course, that's not a guarantee. There's nothing guaranteed.
Does it really come down to Nolan Gorman and Jordan Walker in terms of guys stepping forward, because those are the guys that could potentially be middle of the order run producing bats?
I think that's a big part of it. To me, this next year is going to be about Nolan Gorman. It's going to be about Jordan Walker. It's going to be about Lars Nootbaar. It's going to be about, you know, Ivan Herrera. It's going to be about those guys. Finding out exactly where they fit, what they can be at the major league level, what they can be long term, and I think that's why there's sort of going to be this reset, or whatever you want to call it, year, is because they need to figure those things out. I mean, you know, obviously there's, you know, I'm sure you hear from it as much as I have, you know, the folks who say, well, they've made bad decisions on guys that they kept too long, or guys that they got rid of and then they flourished somewhere else. I think that's part of what this next year is going to be about, is figuring out where they feel like these guys are so they can make those decisions going forward.
The reporting recently has been also that the team's not jumping to trade Ryan Helsley, that they're not jumping to trade Eric Fetty. Those are two guys that have a lot of value. I think Fetty's value has been gone way up as we've seen the deals that Severino and Montas and Boyd have signed. All of a sudden, Fetty at $7.5 million looks so much more valuable than even before. Do you buy the idea that those guys are not going to get traded, or is this more posturing and waiting to see maybe what comes back to the Cardinals after some other things happen this offseason?
With Freddie, I guess I'd buy it with Freddie mostly because when they acquired him, I think a big part of that was that he had term left, and also it gives them, you know, a little bit of leeway to not have to rush some of the young guys. I mean, obviously we saw, you know, with Pallante, he got his run last year and was able to sort of thrive as they gave him more time. Some of their pitching prospects are still, you know, don't have a whole lot of experience in the upper minors, at least the names that people, you know, are sort of anxious to see, whether that's a Quinn Matthews who jumped multiple levels and only had four starts at AAA last year. Tink Hens, who was spent all year at AA. I mean, you know, a lot of these guys, you know, you could, you know, move them aggressively, but at the same time, if you have people like Freddie in place, who you feel like you have an idea of what you're going to get from him, you know, you can sort of project with some comfortability what he's going to give you, then you don't have to sort of force the issue with some of these guys who may still not be ready yet. With Helsley, I think that one I feel like could go either way. I feel like there's some posturing going on there, and there's also potentially a lot of back-end relievers available in the market, you know, whether it's trades or free agency. I mean, you're talking about Devin Williams. You're talking about potentially, you know, Miller out in Oakland, even though there's some reporting that says they won't move him. So there's guys who are also potentially available, whether it's this offseason or going into, you know, the season into the trade deadline. Plus, this time of year, I feel like there's teams that are probably more likely to, you know, take the stance of the, well, or a hard stance on what they're willing to give up because, well, we have options. We have guys in-house that we can go to. As you get close to a trade deadline, then, you know, weaknesses become glaring and needs become pretty pointed, and then maybe that changes what teams are willing to come off of and to make a deal.
Nolan Arenado is the guy that seems most likely to be traded. There's been some talk that the Cardinals want to shed a lot of that salary while also getting a respectable return back for him. Is that a legit possibility, or is this going to be one of those things where a team either picks up a lot of salary or a team gives back a solid prospect, but both those things can't happen together?
That's what I think makes that complicated is, you know, people want to say, well, you need to make sure you get, you know, whether it's a top pitching prospect or whatever it is that you said you feel like, you know, you should be able to get for Nolan Arenado. But then it's, well, the amount of years and the amount of money that's left, unless you're eating some of that, maybe that the team that's acquiring him is less likely to come off of that or to give you what you're looking for, especially considering, you know, last year was one of his least productive years since he's been in the majors. You know, he's in getting into his, you know, mid-30s. And so to say that you're going to absorb those years and all the money and then give up a top prospect or, you know, somebody who's, you know, close to big league ready, then that might be a hard sell. Now, if they're willing to, you know, maybe come off of, you know, whatever expectation is on what level of prospect, or if they're, you know, willing to, you know, do something to sort of offset some of that money, then maybe that does change the return. So I think that's what makes it a difficult negotiation, and it's going to depend on really, you know, the team that you're negotiating with, what they're willing to give, you know, the sort of the back and forth. And then the other X factor is, you know, he can always turn down the trade too. So that's why I think that's you know, a lot of moving parts to that potential move there.
We're talking with Lynn Worthy from the Post-Dispatch and STL Today, previewing the winter meetings, which begin on Monday down in Dallas. Do you think the Cardinals pull something off, whether it is trading Arenado, whether, you know, Steven Matz is another name that's out there a whole lot, maybe there's something else out there? Do you think that when everything wraps up on Thursday morning that we're going to be getting out of there and we're going to have something legit to talk about when it comes to the Cardinals?
I'm not sure if it's going to get done by then, just because it feels like a lot of things have sort of been in a holding pattern because, you know, you've got some big names in the Major League Baseball free agent market who are still not made decisions yet. I mean, I feel like you know, Juan Soto is going to have a ripple effect. Whether that means, you know, teams who are in on him and who sort of like, you know, set money aside, that once he decides where he's going and there's teams who are out of that contention are going to allocate those funds somewhere else. Whether that means he's, you know, sort of setting a market for other free agents who want to sort of slot their value based off of what he gets. Either way, I feel like that, things like that, Alex Bregman, especially in the third base market, which maybe has a trickle-down effect to teams who might be interested in Nolan Arenado. So I feel like there's other things that will affect whether or not the Cardinals are, you know, in able to sort of like, you know, execute some of the things that we think they might be working on by the time you get through the winter meetings. And then, you know, and obviously after that, I mean, you still have a good chunk of time between that and when it's, you know, really spring training and when you really get into the nitty gritty part of, you know, setting rosters. So I wouldn't be surprised if it's, you know, if nothing gets pulled, the trigger doesn't get pulled on anything next week. But maybe that's where the ball starts rolling as far as other things start happening, and then you start to see things move.
It is interesting how so many things can be connected, because a team like the Yankees might be on Juan Soto, and if Soto goes somewhere else, well, then all of a sudden they might have a renewed interest in Bregman where they're not so totally interested in him. If Soto goes there, like, just you don't connect Soto and Bregman, but you do in a way, and then that impacts Arenado. Just, I think you're right that Soto is that first domino, but it really impacts a lot of other things across Major League Baseball.
Yeah, and you know, you don't know necessarily how teams plan to pivot on some of these things, and I mean, I'm sure they've thought through multiple, you know, scenarios, but I think there is a lot of interconnectedness, and then, you know, teams maybe in a holding pattern right now, maybe they're lining things up, but they're still waiting to see if, you know, plan A doesn't come through the way they thought, then how do you sort of like move off of that, and what's going to be the next move that you make to sort of fill in the gaps from, you know, not getting the guy that maybe you had targeted. So, yeah, I think a lot of things, you know, once the ball starts rolling, then things start to move in a lot of different ways, a lot of different places, and then you start to see things trickle down. But I feel like it's one of those things where you need that first initial, you know, domino to fall, and then things sort of fall in line from there.
Last thing for you, and just kind of very generally speaking, we've seen, since the last time we talked with you, the Cardinals made the Rob Serfolio hire, and then this past week they hired three directors coming in from different organizations. We were all at that press conference where there was the talk about this year being a focus on player development. Now we're starting to see the names that are going to be holding very large roles in that reset. Do you like the names, and do you like the moves that the Cardinals have made so far when it comes to that?
From what, you know, I mean, obviously you're sort of looking at resumes at this point and just sort of, you know, what you can glean about their track records. But, yeah, I think just in terms of modernizing their setup, I think it's a good sign. I mean, some of it is also just getting back to sort of a baseline level of things that they had or positions they had in place and the personnel they had going before the pandemic. I mean, you know, come out of the pandemic, obviously, you also had minor league contraction right before the pandemic. So there was, you know, you lose some positions there, but then also the Cardinals just didn't, you know, reinstitute some spots that they seems like they're now finally doing. So I think that is a positive sign. Obviously, time will tell exactly how that plays out. But I mean, based off of, you know, you look at Chaim Bloom's track record and you can look at when he was in Boston, like they really beefed up a lot of the personnel, not just coaches, but, you know, coordinators, a lot of different, you know, performance staff, a lot of those things in Boston. Going back to, you know, when I was in Kansas City, I think that was one of the things that happened, like with the Royals, was they modernized their minor league system not long or going into the pandemic. And then a lot of the guys that are their core players right now that, you know, made a playoff run, Bobby Witt Jr., Vinny Pasquantino, MJ Melendez, Michael Massey, a lot of those guys were either just coming into the farm system or in the lower levels, and they benefited from that, and you see them having success in the major league. So I think it's a positive sign, but time will tell exactly how that plays out.
He is Lynn Worthy, covers the Cardinals for the Post-Dispatch and STL Today. You can follow along with him on Twitter at LWorthySports. Lynn, thanks so much for the time. Hopefully we'll see you at the baseball winter meetings. I'm sure we'll talk again real soon.
All right. Thanks for having me.
Awesome. Very good. That's Lynn Worthy joining us on the program. Appreciate him taking some time with us. We'll switch gears. We'll talk some Blues hockey. They win again last night as they come up with the victory against the Flames in overtime 4-3. They have won all but one game that Jim Montgomery has coached, and they have points in every single game that Jim Montgomery has coached. The sample size still small, but it is getting larger, and it is notable what the Blues are doing. We'll hear a little bit from Jim Montgomery as the Blues practiced earlier today. We'll do that coming up in just a moment. This is the Graybar Sports Open Line on KMOX. Back at it. It's a Graybar Sports Open Line right here on KMOX. My name is Matt Pauly, taking you until 8 o'clock this evening. At 8 o'clock, we'll have the Gas House Gang, which we record Monday through Friday at 12 noon, doing it live via the KMOX social media channel. So whether it's a YouTube, I would suggest to you, subscribe to the KMOX Sports YouTube, but you can watch it on Twitter, you can watch it on Facebook, and then we make it into a radio show that we air at night. So that's going to be coming up this evening at 8 o'clock. Tonight's program featuring myself and Bernie Miklas for an hour. The Blues get another win yesterday. They are, 4-0-1 since Jim Montgomery took over. It's remarkable what they've been able to do. They have at least 1 point in every game, and they've won 4 of the 5 games. Colton Parayko, what a 48 hours for him, named to Team Canada for the Four Nations tournament that's coming up. Then he scores the OT winner last night. Robert Thomas had a nice game, goal, couple assists. Pavel Buchnevich got back into the lineup. He scores. Zach Bolduc scored. There might be nobody who has benefited more from the coaching change than Bolduc. He was being a healthy scratch, like a young guy who just wasn't getting opportunities under Drew Bannister. And now he has had some really, really good performances and big moments for the Blues since Montgomery has taken over. So when you go on these longer road trips, the goal is to win as many games as possible. But kind of the secondary goal, or the thing that you can do to try to make that happen, is you stack up wins early, because it's harder to win games at the end of road trips, and that's what the Blues have been able to do. They've won the first 2 games of this 4-game road trip. Not that they're playing with house money. They've still got a little bit of a hole that they need to dig out of, but pretty much at any point, no matter what, they are in a spot where this is a perfectly fine road trip. They've won at least 2 games here, and we'll see what they can do. They're going to get back at it tomorrow as they match up against Edmonton. That means Dylan Holloway, Philip Broberg, a couple guys who were with Edmonton last year. Obviously, a lot was made of the offer sheets, and they are now with the Blues, and they'll get the opportunity to face off against their former team. Jim Montgomery did speak with the media earlier today. That was kind of the main storyline of his media session today, just Broberg and Holloway and what they're going to do coming up tomorrow. And Montgomery spoke generally about those two individuals, what they're bringing to the Blues, and what it means for them to match up against their former team.
Well, what I like about both these young men is they're hockey players. Like, how much they love working on their game, their craft, getting better. During meetings, team meetings, you can see them nodding, like, because they're studying, they want to get better, they want to know, you know, what they can do to help the team. So that's the thing that jumps out at me in my, 10 days, with them. And I think, you know, coming back here, obviously it's going to be emotional and it's going to be a new experience for them, like it is for every player in the league when you switch teams. But if Wayne Gretzky can switch teams, anyone can switch teams in this league.
That is true. Of course, we saw that for a very short amount of time here in St. Louis with Gretzky. Let's get into specifically Broberg and Holloway and what he's seen from them, because those are a couple individuals that he doesn't have a previous relationship with. Obviously, there's been so much talk about how Montgomery was able to walk right into the room and really just not have much of a period of time of learning the team, because he knows so many guys from when he was an assistant. Well, there's a few guys on the team that weren't around before. That includes Broberg and Holloway. So Montgomery's been learning about him. He likes what he sees so far. Was asked about Broberg, and he talked about the different things and different characteristics that he has that makes him potentially a very special player.
His physical gifts, I think, are very evident, his skating. But his stick, defensively and offensively, he always just seems to be in the way. He's always in the right spot. So his hockey sense combined with his physical gifts makes him a very valuable 200-foot defenseman.
How about for Holloway? Montgomery says he's doing a lot of things right now quite well that's resulting in him having success.
He's tenacious. He wants to have an impact on the game. His ability to reload, to get above pucks defensively, you know, allows us to swarm teams, and then, you know, his ability to go the other way and drive pucks wide. He's not afraid of going to hard scoring areas, and I think that's why he's had success so far this year. And I think his confidence has grown. He's getting significantly more ice time.
It's notable just how, you know, Montgomery's been on the job for a week and a half, and in so many ways it feels like he's the long-term coach of the Blues. I mean, this is just a guy who, obviously, he was a fit with the organization, comfortable with the organization, had the relationships with so many people. He was asked about how, you know, a week and a half in, he's really established himself in his role, and he was asked about how it's going and how he's feeling still very early on into his Blues head coaching tenure.
It's been a lot of fun. You know, it's different. I've never been through this experience in the middle of the season, and you really dive in and, like, I always say this to, you know, people that I'm close with, is like, I'm trying to catch my breath, but it doesn't seem like I can. And I'm loving it because it's just like, what's on next? Not getting a lot of sleep just because the brain doesn't stop working. When you kind of get in a rhythm with your staff and your players and your structure, you kind of be able to organize and plan your day really well. And right now, it just seems like it's from one thing to another, but the routine is starting to get there.
It's interesting. When you lose, I've lost a job in my life. It's never a fun experience. And I think, at least for me, when that happened, and I think many people can relate to that, when it happens, it's jarring. It's shocking. Like, it's kind of an attack on you. You start doing all this reflecting upon if you could have done anything differently, if it's your fault, if it's their fault. Like, there's just all these emotional type thoughts going through your mind. Well, for Montgomery, while that absolutely can be the case, he said because it was such a quick turnaround from him losing the job in Boston to getting the job in St. Louis, that never really had like that regrouping time, I guess you could say, after everything went down in Boston.
I didn't get the unemployment check, you know. Didn't even get an opportunity to fill out the paperwork, which I'm grateful for. You know, that being said, you know, when the opportunity arose, I don't know if mentally I was out of the state of what did I do wrong, where did I go wrong, what could I have done better to keep the job I had. And then when this came, all of a sudden, you know, the blood starts pumping, like, here's a new opportunity, and start looking at everything that is exciting about, you know, the Blues organization and the people inside it.
It's interesting to think about. I mean, this guy was the head coach of the Boston Bruins 2.5 weeks ago, and now it feels like he's been the coach of the Blues. Like, he's just such a great fit, and he walks in this. It's funny how things work out in life, and this one worked out this way, and everybody's probably better for it. We've discussed this previously. He probably wasn't long for Boston. They had made some overtures towards him about a contract extension, which I don't think he engaged with very much. So if it became clear in Boston that he probably wasn't, my conspiracy theory on this is he was always going to be the Blues head coach next season. That there was an understanding and a belief that, you know, if the Bruins were coming to him about a contract extension and he was rebuffing those overtures, as has been previously reported to me, and just how quickly it got done with the Blues, to me it feels like this is always going to happen. He was always going to end up as the Blues coach. It just so happens that it happens a quarter of the way through this season, as opposed to waiting to the beginning of next season. But all that being said, still, you he lost his job. And it's not an easy thing to go through, but it becomes a whole lot easier when, for him, clearly, for him, this is clearly a better situation. This isn't comparing the Blues and the Bruins like from a big picture standpoint. For Jim Montgomery, being the Blues coach is a much better spot than being the Bruins coach. And there's stuff that he's going through right now. His wife and his kids are still in Boston, and they're going to finish out the school year before eventually coming back to St. Louis. And, man, that's tough. That is tough. I've done that before. I remember when I moved from Colorado to Milwaukee, I was there for months while my wife was still back in Colorado. And that was as challenging of a period of my life as I've ever had. I would not wish that on anybody. It is challenging to go through something like that. But when all is said and done, he's going to be better off for it. One more break. We'll come back. We'll wrap up hour number one of the program. This is the Graybar Sports Open Line on KMOX.
Welcome back to the Graybar Sports Open Line. Once again, Matt Pauley on KMOX.
Starting to wrap up hour number one of the show. Coming up just after 7 o'clock, we are going to be joined by Ben Arnett, sports director at KOMU-TV in Columbia. We're going to preview a really big college basketball game that's going to be going on Sunday for Missouri. They match up against Kansas. I was bummed on a couple levels the other day when Kansas lost. First off, it's hard to beat a really good team when they're coming off an unexpected loss. That's the main thing. So I want to see Missouri give Kansas a game coming up on Sunday. And I think that there's a possibility that Missouri could win that game, especially with it being in Columbia. It means so much. But the fact that Kansas is coming off a loss to Creighton their last time out, like they're just not going to lose two games in a row. So that was the thing. When I saw Kansas lose on Wednesday, I thought that is that's not so good for Missouri. So we'll see. And then there's a college basketball tonight of note. Illinois is in action. They open up Big Ten play as they take on Northwestern. Call me whatever you want to call me. I don't like these random conference games still early on in the season. And the Big Ten's not the only league that does it. But like for Illinois, they're going to play back-to-back league games here. They're going to play Northwestern tonight, and then they're going to match up against Wisconsin coming up on Tuesday. And then they're going to go wrap up their non-conference schedule for the rest of December. Outside of like extreme situations, I just like go play your non-conference schedule, get your non-conference schedule done, and then jump into conference play. Two random conferences. So much of what happens for you is you're judged upon your conference record. That gets you your seeding in the conference tournament and everything. And this early on in the season, you're still building to who you are. So I don't know. It's not a huge gripe. I just sometimes part of my job is to complain about things that I don't like. And this can go on the list. I do not like these random college basketball conference games happening and then jumping back to the non-conference before eventually going to conference play for good. Do not like that whatsoever. All right, we'll talk about the Missouri and Kansas game. We'll do that with Ben Arnett. He joins us after the 7 o'clock news right here on KMOX.
When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof like Alo, Allbirds, or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling and for shoppers buying simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet, and the not-so-secret secret, with Shop Pay that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going. So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell whenever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout experience as business powerhouses like Alo, Allbirds, and Skims. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast to upgrade your selling today. shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
Hey, y'all, it's Chip Patterson from the Cover 3 Podcast, part of the CBS Sports Podcast Network. College football is about to enter its first ever 12-team playoff era, so join me, along with Tom Fornelli, Danny Cannell, and Bud Elliott, as we drop new episodes 5 times a week to close out the year. We've got reactions, bracket breakdowns, and best bets for these matchups with championship stakes. Follow and listen to the Cover 3 Podcast on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back to the Graybar Sports Open Line. Once again, Matt Pauly on King of OX.
Into our second hour of the program. Welcome back in as we roll on. Big weekend for Mizzou basketball. Sunday, they're going to match up against number one Kansas. Also this weekend, we should find out where Missouri is going to be bowling from a football perspective. Happy to welcome back on to the program sports director at KOMU TV in Columbia. He is Ben Arnett. Ben, appreciate you taking some time with us. How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
I am good. Let's start with a little bit of football because we learned today offensive lineman Armon Mumbu is going to be declaring for the NFL draft. Maybe a little bit of a surprise, and this certainly, assuming he would have been back with the Tigers next year, this is quite the loss for the team.
Yeah, it is. And you know, a good thing for Armon, obviously, he got the feedback that he wanted to get, that he's pretty confident he'll be a high-level draft pick, and that's hard to argue with. I mean, not just, you know, his size and his ability. I believe he graded out to the point he only allowed one sack this season, and he's the prototypical guy that NFL teams are going to want, but he was really consistent. I mean, this is a guy that started 25 straight games. Mizzou's got some offensive line depth. They were excited about how deep the line was going into the season. That's going to be put to the test as they move forward without Armon.
It's a Mizzou season that in my eyes was really good. And maybe there were some external expectations going into the season that this was a team that could potentially get to the college football playoff, and that's not going to happen. But a 9-win season, the potential for a 10-win season, you look at the type of record this team could have over a 2-year span, it's been really, really good. And sometimes it feels like the social media chatter has been a little bit more negative than positive. I guess, do you see that? And what's your take on this? Because I feel like Tigers fans should be pretty happy with where the program's at.
I'm sorry, is the question, do I see negative chatter on social media? The answer, regardless of the subject, is an emphatic yes. But no, I do, and I agree with you. And I think for Missouri, it is difficult to feel tantalizingly close to that, because it's very simple right now to look and go, if they would have gotten that stop against South Carolina, mm-hmm. they'd be right there in that conversation. Who knows how that would play out? To me, it is another good season and another step forward for the program, because Missouri has the attention of the college football world after the last 2 years, and not just the, you know, 20 wins and perhaps another one in 2 seasons in the toughest conference in America, but the way they are competing in all of the areas that are now so important in the remade world of college football of the last 3 to 4 years. They have been extremely successful in the transfer portal. They signed another top 20 recruiting class of high school kids earlier this week. You know, I don't hear Eli Drinkwitz voicing concerns about the ability of his program to compete in terms of revenue sharing, which is on the horizon. And when it comes to NIL, and Eli is usually, he's going to be vocal if he's not satisfied with something. You don't hear that from him. They've got a lot of really high-level transfer success stories, even coming off this last year's team with guys like Corey Flagg and the two running backs and Theo Weiss before them and Caden Green and other folks. And they're looking to replicate that again. To me, this bowl game is really important, because for a program like Missouri, 10-3 is a lot better than 9-4, because 10-3 gets the attention of the pollsters going into next year. It puts you in that conversation once again. Hey, that's a 10-win SEC team. A 10-win SEC team is always going to be in the playoff conversation from day one, as opposed to going 9-4, or if they had done worse, if they'd lost that Arkansas game, you're really starting over from zero. That's the kind of program Missouri, unfortunately, is in the brand hierarchy. So I think it was important to go 9-3. I think it's even more important to go 10-3.
Speaking of potential 10-win SEC teams, the committee put Alabama in front of South Carolina, in front of Ole Miss. You could find a way to make an argument for any of those three teams for that top spot. The committee went with Alabama. Some controversy on them jumping over Miami. Some controversy on the potential of them maybe being ahead of SMU if SMU ends up losing to Clemson. I guess generally speaking, do you think Alabama is the best of those three SEC teams that I mentioned?
I wouldn't necessarily argue against it. I just think that, you know, this whole conversation is the product of everybody in the conference getting better and us getting to the point where, you know, I don't think Vanderbilt beats Alabama because Alabama falls so far in 1 year without Nick Saban that, oh my goodness, they lost to Vanderbilt. I think Vanderbilt's gotten that much better. I think everybody in the conference has gotten that much better. I look around at a league where, you know, Mark Stoops at Kentucky isn't done. He's been way too consistent and way too good for a decade there. You can see that program rebounding. I think things have gotten, you know, because of the changes in the sport that we talked about a moment ago, it's brought everybody, especially in the SEC, a lot closer together and made everybody a lot better. And so it's really hard to look at records the same way that we used to. But that Alabama team that I saw play Missouri and that we all saw play Georgia, yeah, that looks like a playoff team to me.
All right, let's jump over to basketball. Big one coming up on Sunday for the Tigers. They're going to match up against number one Kansas. Kansas just coming off a loss. I was kind of bummed to see Kansas lose that game because I have a hard time believing that Kansas is going to lose back-to-back games. That probably wasn't great for Missouri that Kansas chose their loss at Creighton.
No, I don't know about that. I mean, every game is its own thing. You never know. I think Bill Self was going to have that group fired up. Bill, you know, I got to cover him from the other side when I worked in Wichita for a couple of years. You know, Bill, I think, cares more about this rivalry than he let on during the 8 or 9 years off in between games. I think he was going to have that group ready to play regardless. I think it's going to be a really good test for Missouri, obviously. It's a Missouri team that is considerably better than they were last year. And you've got three guys on this team who are from the Kansas side of the KC Metro that could be, you know, the determining factors in this game. It's Mark Mitchell, Tamar Bates, and Aiden Shaw. Shaw's played pretty well in this game over the years. Tamar Bates, I know, very much wants to play well and win this game. And his best friend and Duke transfer, Mark Mitchell, is with him now. It's going to be Mark Mitchell's first game. He was pretty cool about it today whenever he spoke to the media. I think this is going to feel like Mizzou KU games of the past. I think there's going to be a little fire in this one.
That Mizzou game against Cal, I mean, they were supposed to win it, but they got down, and so much was made in the second half of the coaching decision of really going to a lot of pick-and-roll offense. We saw some mid-range jumpers, things that it felt like coaching really played in. What do they take away specifically from that second half against Cal that they try to go forward for this game against Kansas?
Missouri's at their best when they're in transition. You know, it really all starts on the defensive end for Mizzou. That's kind of been the story for them since the first game of the season. The thing that's impressed me about this group, and again, will be key against Kansas and kind of the takeaway from Cal, is they've got much better guard play than they did a year ago. And when they do end up in a half-court situation, they got to stay patient. And they've got to look for chances to attack the basket. You mentioned it. It opens up so many things. So many of the problems with this team a year ago was the ball getting stuck on the perimeter, bad shots, not being able to get a good look, not being able to get to the foul line. This team so far this season, whether it's the second half against Cal or the other wins in the six-game winning streak or the great first half against Memphis, they attack the basket. They try to get downhill. They don't let the ball get stuck. They've got a lot better rebounding potential. And the other thing that opens up is it makes their three-point shooting a lot better. They're not taking as many three-pointers as they have the first couple of years under Dennis, and they're better three-pointers because they're in rhythm, catch-and-shoot threes. Before Caleb Grill got hurt, that's where he was excelling. That's where Marquez Warwick, the transfer from Northern Kentucky, continues to excel. When they move the ball, they're in rhythm, and they take in-rhythm shots. They're at their best. When they try to create off the bounce, they're at their worst.
Ben Arnett, he is the sports director at KOMU-TV in Columbia. He's on Twitter at Ben Arnett, K-O-M-U. Ben, I always appreciate you taking some time with us. Thank you so much. Have a great holiday period, and hopefully we can talk soon.
Yeah, anytime. Same to you.
Awesome. Very good. Ben Arnett joining us on the program. We appreciate him spending some time with us today. It's going to be fun. I think he's right. The thing that he said there that most resonated with me, this Missouri-Kansas game coming up on Sunday is going to feel like the old school Missouri-KU games. And it's just good. Look, I'm a Big 12 guy because I went to school at K-State, and it always bummed me out when teams left the Big 12, and I understood why there was like this moratorium against current Big 12 teams playing former Big 12 teams and everything. Like, I understood that, but at the end of the day, it's good for the fan bases. It's good for college basketball to have rivalries like this alive, and I'm looking forward to seeing what happens on Sunday. Kevin Wheeler joins us next. We'll talk Cardinals here on KMOX.
Welcome back to the Graybar Sports Open Line. Once again, Matt Pauley on KMOX.
It's Graybar Sports Open Line right here on KMOX as we start to come down the home stretch of the program today. Our final day originating this show from St. Louis. I will be in Dallas for baseball's winter meetings coming up next week, starting on Monday. Full shows every day, and we'll have our first countdown to opening day show on Thursday evening as well from the baseball winter meetings. So talk a little baseball. We generally bring him in on Fridays around this time. It's our good friend Kevin Wheeler. Hey, Kevin.
Hi, Matt.
How are you?
I'm good. I'm jealous.
Okay.
Because I'm not going to Dallas for the winter meetings, but other than that, everything's good.
It'll be fun. You know, you get to, I've been around baseball for a long time, going back to like my minor league days mm-hmm. and to where I've been. It's just, for me, the thing that I enjoy most of it is like, this is your baseball life because you see all the people. Like, I'll run into my general manager that I had when I was doing single-A baseball in Burlington, Iowa, and things like that. It's if you've spent years and years and years in the game of baseball the way I have, it's the one opportunity every year to see all these people that you've worked with closely at some point.
It's very cool. You know, yeah. I was talking about this. We were talking this on DGS that, you know, the one thing that's really cool about the winter meetings and the reason that this gathering can spur action is because everybody's there.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, if you have a conversation about trading a particular player and you're talking to three or four different teams, you can just go from room to room to room instead of a text from a distance or a phone call or whatever. The proximity can be kind of the catalyst to move things faster. It doesn't mean you'll get a deal done during the winter meetings, but it can move the process along faster.
And there, you know, John Mozeliak stays in his suite most of the time. Some executives work the lobby and everything. You don't see Mo that much. But you'll see his lieutenants walking around mm-hmm. and they're having conversations. There's a lot of conversations that are very, very intentional over the duration of the few days.
Yeah. And I'm sure there are some, you know, quiet dinners in those suites where people are hanging out and talking, you know, behind closed doors, maybe having a few drinks. And, you know, again, sometimes a more social setting mm-hmm. can spur things as opposed to, again, just a phone call or a text.
The hotel bar at night at the baseball winter meetings
isn't
is
that
something
where all the media hangs
seen.
Out?
Yeah, but a lot of people are there, and it is something to be seen for sure. So I'll enjoy being there coming up next week. A few things to go through from the week. Let's kind of start now and work our way back. Katie Wu had a report, and you know, Bernie and I talked about this on the Gas House Gang, which radio listeners will hear coming up in just a little while after the 8 o'clock news. But right now, the indications are from John Mozeliak, based off some comments that he made to Katie, that this team might not trade Ryan Helsley. This team might not trade Eric Fetty. That this team feels like they can compete next year, even in a scenario where this year is also about giving young guys runway to have some success. It doesn't all add up.
No,
that's the problem here, because you can look, math is math, numbers are numbers. You have so many positions on the field, you have so many at bats, you have so many roster spots. So I'm right now I am trying to figure out what it is actually going to look like, because it does feel like the messaging has changed a little bit.
I mean, if you only move like Steven Matz, are you really doing a reset?
No, but if you do trade Steven Matz, at least that overtly opens up the door for Michael McGreevy.
Sure it does. But I mean, like, okay, one.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, I guess the other thing is we're not going to demote Jordan Walker, right? I mean, is that what it's, is that the reset? The reset is we're going to open one rotation spot and then we're just not going to send Walker down?
I actually think the reset,
because that's not much of a change. I mean, it's a change, but it's not that much.
I think the reset has turned into, we're going to let Jordan Walker and Nolan Gorman play every day, and we're going to find out what we have in these guys.
I guess, but I mean, like, Gorman's coming into his fourth year.
Yeah, but that's what it has turned into.
Yeah, I hope not. Like, I understand the Cardinals like to be guarded. They don't like to commit. Nobody does. And it could be an indication that maybe they don't like what's being proposed to them in deals. Maybe they're looking at it and going, well, maybe it's just not worth it. You know, if this is all we're being offered for Helsley or for Fetty, maybe it's just better to give it a shot and see if we can go win 88 games and get in the playoffs or something along those lines. I mean, like, I can see that. I'm not sure that that's going to accomplish what they've been talking about, which is clearing the path for a different way of doing things. They don't have to do a fire sale either, though. You know, I think if two or three moves is enough. Like, I think you have to move Nolan Arenado.
I would agree.
I think you have to. You clear up no playing time if you don't on the offensive side.
If you do not trade Nolan Arenado, all of these things cannot happen. You can't get Nolan Gorman 600 at bats. You can't get J.J. Weatherholt the opportunity to come up in the middle of the season. You can't get Alec Burleson in the lineup on basically an everyday basis. Like, two of those three things.
Well, I mean, you can't get a lot of at bats for Thomas DeJacy.
Or Brendan Donovan.
So if Nolan Arenado's there, that means Gorman's going to be playing third. I'm sorry, second. That means Donovan's going to be playing left. And then Newton center.
But then you close off the door to potential Victor Scott.
I know, this is my point. Right. This is kind of the point. That one, any one of those being subtracted accomplishes the same thing. But of course you want to trade away the oldest of that group and obviously the most expensive. So you're not going to be able to get rid of all that money. I think that might be a pipe dream if you think you're going to be able to get that somebody to take all of that. You could, I guess, but you won't get much. And maybe that's fine. Maybe the balance is that's okay. We will save the money. We've got players that we want to look at, and that's okay. And if it ends up with, you know, Gorman and Donovan, one of them at second, one of them at third, that's fine. And then Newt's in left, and then Sejacy can play both of those positions. And then if Weatherholt tears it up, he can come in and take a spot later in the year, depending on who's doing what in that other group. So there a lot depends on clearing a spot. You're not clearing a spot at first base. That's Contreras. Catcher's covered. Right field is going to be Jordan Walker. Shortstop is Mason Wynn. So you only have left, third, second, and DH. And Burley's the DH.
Right.
At least against righties. At least against right-handers. I'll be curious to see if they do a better job this year playing platoon splits. Because last year, the lefties killed them. And they didn't do anything about it. They had a bench that was completely not helpful in that regard.
This is where Lucan Baker plays in.
If they decide they can carry basically a DH only, though. I mean, like, can you carry a guy that's only a platoon DH on the left facing lefties? Because you don't have any flexibility there if you're doing that.
I think you do carry him, and he can play.
I don't have a problem with it, but boy, is it a tight fit.
It's tight, but he can play at first base every once in a while if you need him to. I'm not going to tell you.
So let's say he takes the Matt Carpenter role.
Yeah.
Like job, right? That spot. And then Sejacy takes the Crawford spot. And you've got a backup catcher, which is going to be either Herrera or Pajes, depending on who's playing, starting that day. And then what? I guess, I mean, are you going to keep both Scott and Ciani? Or do you find a right-handed bat that can somehow fit into your outfield mix to, you know, give Newt a day off against a tough lefty, or to spot up in center field once in a while? Like, if you could find a right-handed bat that can play center field at least competently, that would be a nice complement to what you have. But where is that guy?
Yeah, and it's hard to make that all work. Like,
this is my point. Right. This is my point. So it's not easy, and you can do it. And I would like to see Baker get that chance. Because if you're trying to win games this year, which they are, use that. Use the platoon advantage for certain guys. And you don't have to make it always the same guys. Maybe it's a day off for Newt today, but the next time it's a lefty, it's a day off for Gorman. And then maybe the next time it's a day off for Ciani. Like, it doesn't have to be like a complete line change. It can just be certain guys getting opportunities to jump in there. Maybe Burley only plays against righties or primarily does. In fact, I would suggest that.
I would too.
And that would be the spot where Baker can DH against lefties. And it complicates it because you'd be like, well, maybe we want other guys to get DH time for rest. I say forget that. Forget that. And if you want to do that, fine. Then Baker just gets that day off. Who cares?
Right, or Burleson gets a day in the outfield. I mean, he's
whatever.
Fine.
Yeah, whatever. I mean, yeah. Yes. So I think a lot of it revolves around clearing out a spot. And the most logical one is Nolan Arenado. But that's clearly tied to what else happens, right? And it is directly linked to the Juan Soto market. Because depending on where Soto goes, that's going to leave four other teams looking for bats. Well, that doesn't mean that their answer is we want Nolan Arenado, but that could mean that if the Yankees lose out on Soto, they could say, all right, we want Alex Bregman, and we're going to sign him to play third base, and we'll move other things around. And now the Astros need a third baseman.
Right.
And that's where you get in. Now, maybe some of that, you know, Willy Adames could play in that. He can play third and short. But the point is, as those pieces start to move around, there could be a team that goes, man, we really need a third baseman. Boston wants to get better defensively at third. The Yankees want to get better defensively at third. Houston's going to need somebody to play third if it's not Alex Bregman. Philly is talking about a change at third with the idea of being a better defensive team on the infield because Trey Turner's not a good defensive shortstop. Stott's really good at second. But Boehm is not good at third. He's just at third. So, and in that ballpark, Nolan probably hits 25 homers.
Yeah, I mean, he's a fit in Philly.
He's a fit in a lot of places, yeah. But then we have the wild card. Where will he go? Right. Where will he accept the deal to?
I think he's a fit in New York with the Yankees.
I do, too.
If I had to choose a team right now that I think he ends up with, I would, by a very thin margin, I would probably choose the Yankees.
Yeah, it's entirely tied to Bregman, which is tied to Soto.
Right.
Right, because if the Yankees get Soto, well, they're not doing any of that. They'll be playing on the margins with other guys. But then that means, okay, that means the Blue Jays. And by the way, the Blue Jays would be a fit for Arenado, but I don't think it's a good fit.
I don't know if he accepts that trade.
I agree. Because if I'm Nolan Arenado, I say I want to be on a contender. That's the whole point. Well, Toronto is no better than the fourth best team in the East.
Right.
So
if you squint really hard.
Oh, you can see how they could be good.
Yeah.
You can see that, but it's not there now. Right? I mean, Baltimore's better right now. New York is better right now. Boston's going big this offseason. It sounds like they're going hard after Burns and Fried and Soto and maybe Bregman. So, and by the way, Boston's a really good fit for Nolan Arenado, too, depending on how these pieces fall together. And the Dodgers are a hard one, too, because I have a hard time. The Dodgers have to move a lot of pieces around to make that work.
Yeah, I don't know if he makes the Dodgers that much better either.
He makes them a lot better defensively.
Yes. But when you look at what you have to...
And he's going to hit sixth, who cares?
You got to figure out where you're moving all the pieces, and at the end of the day...
Well, that's the thing. It's Max Muncy then has to play second.
Right.
Is Max Muncy a good second baseman? I mean, honestly, he's probably better there than he is at third. He's probably more... But you can hide him better at second than you can at third base. Maybe. But then they got to move Gavin Lux, which they might do. I'm sure a team would love to take Gavin Lux. But... You know, who knows what their ideas are, because the Dodgers could be looking at big. They could be looking at Teoscar Hernandez coming back. You just don't have any idea where they're going to go. I see how it could work, but it's not just a simple make this move.
No, it's a challenging thing to make that happen.
It's going to take some shuffling.
You know, when it comes to Helsley, and this kind of goes back to the dominoes falling, Devin Williams is probably going to get moved this offseason. There were some rumblings about 2 weeks ago that maybe the Brewers weren't going to move him, and now it's come back around that they probably will. And that's the move for them. It makes a lot of sense. Your guy, Pete Fairbanks, is evidently on the market. A guy like Ryan
Not
Presley.
Not a shock at all for Tampa.
Yeah, looking for a bounce back with Presley and getting back into a closer spot. He's going to be out there. If you're the Cardinals, I think you need to just be comfortable sitting back, letting all of that play out, and then see who's left and what you can get for Helsley.
Well, this may be
point.
Why we're hearing this stuff about them being comfortable with keeping Helsley, because the market for potential closers is pretty crowded. I mean, you've got Estevez out there in free agent who's coming off a great year. You've got Hoffman from Philly there are some rumors that teams are looking at him as maybe as a starter to pull the Seth Lugo thing to go from the pen to the starting rotation. But he's a candidate to close for somebody, and he doesn't cost you prospects. You know, you mentioned Devin Williams. You mentioned Pete Fairbanks. You know, Presley could be available. There's two or three other guys. Kirby Yates is out there who's coming off a great year. It might just be that because of all of those options, teams don't want to give you what you need to get for Helsley. If that's the case, then yeah, keep him.
Right.
Because something could change in July.
And you don't sell low on Ryan Helsley.
No, exactly. Yeah. Exactly. So it's not we've said this all along about Helsley. You don't have to trade him. It's just if you get the right deal, you trade him.
100%.
And, you know, with the sheer number of possibilities that are out there for teams looking for help in the ninth inning, it's a hard sell there. I mean, even Brandon Finnegan's out there. You know, he might be a lower cost, you know, upgrade for somebody, but he's closed 30, 35 games last year. Was it 39 games maybe? Did he save last year? He's not that great. Like his batted ball data is not great. But, you know, again, he's probably not going to cost you your top prospects. You know, I don't think the Cardinals move Helsley just to move money.
No.
If they're moving him, it's because they want talent. And if I have to choose as another team, do I sign Estevez and maybe overpay a little bit, but I get to keep all my prospects? I probably choose that over giving up my prospects for Helsley. But get to July, when their options are limited for all those contenders and somebody went down with an injury or something, then you might be able to command that better return.
I'm sure the Yankees and the Dodgers, if they had it to do all over again, they would have liked to pick up some more relief pitching at the
deadline. And they're both in that market now.
Right. So that, I think that's...
I mean, I forgot, Clay Holmes is out there too. Yeah.
That's going to be something to watch. Who was it? Who's thinking about making Clay Holmes a starter?
I don't know. I saw that too, yeah.
Was it the Mets?
Might be.
I mean, that's... David Stearns has done stuff like that.
And I mentioned Hoffman in that regard. Those are guys that have three pitches.
Yeah.
And one thing they didn't have when they were younger players was the command. And by the way, in Hoffman's case, he also didn't have his kind of hybrid cutter slider thing. He didn't have it. So now he's got an upper 90s fastball. He's got a low 90s split and a low 90s cutter slider hybrid. So he throws them all with the same effort. And he throws them all for strikes. So not that crazy to be like, maybe that guy can go do this for five innings instead of one. Yeah. If you can, because he was a starter coming along. He was a first round pick as a starting pitcher. And, you know, we'll see. I like that idea. In fact, I suggested today, it's not out yet, I don't think, but in the next episode of the Best Podcast in Baseball, I joined Derek today. And I suggested that might even be a nice, smart play for the Cardinals. If you want to make a play on a three-year deal on Hoffman with the idea that you're going to say, hey, we're going to make you a starter. And, you know, if it doesn't work, then we'll go back to the pen because we know that works for you. And you can just go back into a high leverage role. But if it works, you could be a starter for us. Now, they're not going to do that.
No.
It's just one of the – Derek asked me, like, if you were going to go into the free agent market as the Cardinals and look at something, to me it would be that. It would be a gamble on a high stuff person that I could turn into something, a bigger asset.
That's Kevin Wheeler. I'm Matt Pauly. We've got tonight, me and Bernie on Gas House Gang at 8 o'clock in just a little while. And then Monday, I'll be in Dallas, and it'll be all four of us.
You'll be joining us from the road.
Yes.
You're going to wear a cowboy hat?
I don't think so.
Belt buckle?
Have you ever owned a cowboy hat?
No.
I owned one at one point. I very rarely wore it. I like made a trip to Texas, and I bought one.
I was going
to
say, if you're not in Texas, is it even allowed to wear them?
You don't see people walking around with cowboy hats very often.
Not very much.
Maybe I should go get a cowboy hat, come back here, walk around downtown St. Louis wearing a cowboy hat.
So when you get down to Dallas, first stop should be at the Texas store and get yourself a hat, a belt buckle, some boots, and some beef jerky and some tobacco.
Yeah, because that's me.
Yeah.
That's really me.
Straight up Matt Pauly.
Good to see you, Kevin.
See you, buddy.
That's Kevin Wheeler. I'm Matt Pauly. We got more coming up in just a moment. This is the Graybar Sports Open Line on KMOX.
Welcome back to the Graybar Sports Open Line. Once again, Matt Pauly on KMOX.
We're back at it here on a Graybar Sports Open Line on KMOX. We do start to wrap things up, but you don't want to go anywhere. Coming up at 8 o'clock, it is the Gas House Gang today. Myself and Bernie Miklas get into a lot of things, including what we just talked about with Kevin Wheeler a few moments ago. Get Bernie's thoughts on kind of the messaging that we're getting from the Cardinals right now, because it felt like this is going to be a step back year, and now the messaging is turning into maybe they're trying to compete a little bit more. I didn't mention this to Kevin. I should have. You'll hear me say it during the Gas House Gang. To me, and I could be completely off base and wrong and incorrect on this, it felt like the messaging started to change right around the time of the election. And the two things that happened right around the election was, one, sports gambling being voted in. So the Cardinals knew that that revenue stream was going to come in. And then right around that time, they also re-upped with their RSN, what is now FanDuel Sports Network Midwest, where they are taking less money. It has been reported, I believe, by the Post-Dispatch that it is a 23% cut. And that's not nothing. That's a lot of money. I'm not trying to be dismissive of their local TV deal being cut by a quarter. That is notable. But these other teams around baseball have taken a much larger and much more significant cut than what the Cardinals have. They are lucky to be in the spot that they're at. And like Kevin and I talked about a few moments ago, if nothing else, there's now kind of some certainty. They know the amount of money they're bringing in off TV. They know that there's going to be sports gambling revenue coming in at some point. Sidebar, I just kind of shooting off the hip here. I haven't heard anything. Maybe I haven't been paying attention. I haven't heard anything about the state of Missouri starting to like build out the sports gambling infrastructure where sports books are going to start opening up and things like that. Maybe there's some things going on behind the scenes, but no date has been given. I think it was maybe the mayor of Kansas City who had said that he was hopeful that there would be sports gambling in Kansas City around the time of the Super Bowl, which seemed like a very aggressive timeline on getting everything put in place. I haven't heard much of anything, and maybe I'm reading and he's listening to the wrong people. I don't even know who to try to talk to get an update on how all of that is going on. But I would be very interested to know what is going on behind the scenes to get potential sports books and things like that across the state of Missouri ready to open, and what the process is on when we might see sports books start to open. We expect to see a sports book inside of Ballpark Village. I would assume that that's going to be there come opening day this year. I don't know for sure, but I think it's a safe bet that there's going to be some type of sports book, betting window, something like that inside of Ballpark Village. So just kind of a off-the-cuff thought there as we do start to wrap things up here on the program. I'm going to be in Dallas. I'm leaving this weekend, and baseball winter meetings kind of unofficially start on Sunday. Things start to happening, and then they start in earnest on Monday. We'll do Sports Open Line next week. Every day, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, we will be live from Dallas. Our first countdown to opening day show, that's going to be on Thursday night. Myself, Mike Claiborne, Ricky Horton, we're all going to be coming your way from 6 o'clock to 8 o'clock, and then that's going to start our weekly countdown to opening day show. We have reached that time of the year where it's going to be happening on a weekly basis, not just here on KMOX, but across the Cardinals radio network, so always enjoy that. But so if you're looking for coverage from the winter meetings, we're going to have a lot of it for you here on KMOX. I'll be doing appearances on various shows on the station. Reports are going to be running in the morning and afternoon. We'll do Sports Open Line live from the winter meetings each night. And then also the Gas House Gang, which you're about to hear, but that we do live at 12 noon each day. I'll be on Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday from baseball's winter meetings, along with some combination of Kevin Wheeler, Tom Ackerman, and Bernie Miklas. So we have you covered. What could be, I'm expecting interesting winter meetings. Now, last year they'd already they'd kind of already made their moves with Gibson and Lynn, and Gray was before then too, if I remember correctly. So going into last year, it felt a little bit anticlimactic for the Cardinals. It did not feel that way though for the industry. Yet industry wide, almost nothing happened last year, and I feel like there's the potential that something happens with the Cardinals. What Kevin and I talked about earlier, and I think Kevin's right, but I also think it's got the possibility of changing, the idea that to get Nolan Arenado moved, you have to wait on some of these other third base dominoes to fall. I think from a common sense, from a logical perspective, that makes sense. But if some team like gets the sense that they're not gonna get Bregman, that, you know, Boehm doesn't really make them a better team, that Adames, you know, working through the whole, is he going to go from shortstop to third base thing, if all that just isn't in the cards, that they can just go ahead and knock out a deal for Nolan Arenado and it makes their team better, I think that could potentially happen. I don't think it's an above 50% chance, but I don't think it's nothing. I think there's a 25, 30, 35% chance that Nolan Arenado gets moved during the course of the baseball winter meetings. I think there's a very good possibility that Steven Matz ends up getting moved during the winter meetings. And then I think there could be some other things happening across baseball, whether or not the you know, there's been talk that Juan Soto might make his decision prior to the meetings. I'm somewhat hopeful that even if he makes his decision, that maybe he pumps the brakes a little bit. It is good for the game of baseball. I talk about this a lot. As somebody who loves the game of baseball, and when, especially when you're competing against football as you are at this time of the year, anything that can put a spotlight on the game in a big way, I think is good and healthy for the sport. So it's everybody who covers baseball shows up to the winter meetings, and MLB Network has their live set, and ESPN has their live set. Like, everybody is there, and there is a very intentional focus on the game. If you can get something big to happen as the winter meetings are happening, see a Juan Soto signing, I think that's good for baseball. So I am hopeful. We got to make it another 72 hours or so. I am hopeful that they are going to be able to work something out where Soto does not officially make his decision until after the baseball winter meetings get underway. And that would be quite the bang to get that all started. So, yeah, we'll be there coming up on Monday. Looking forward to making the trip. And hopefully we'll be able to provide you some good content, some good coverage from what could be a very interesting meetings. John Mozeliak does speak with us on an every night basis over the run of the meetings. So that will be, we'll get information from him on how things are going, maybe some more clarification on what the messaging is, what the messaging should be about how much they can expect to be able to contend and compete this upcoming season. That is going to do it for this edition of the program. Thanks so much for being tuned in, and we look forward to talking to you from Dallas for another Sports Open Line coming up on Monday night. Have a wonderful weekend. We'll talk to you on Monday here on KMOX.